Hey everyone, welcome back to Daily Newsletter Digest. It's May 8th, 2026, and wow, we have a lot to unpack today.
Yeah, this is one of those days where AI news is absolutely dominating, but we've also got some wild stuff happening in markets, tech, and even a legitimate health scare.
Right. So let's start with the health story because it's getting attention. There's a hantavirus outbreak on a Dutch cruise ship called the Hondius. Three passengers have died, five more are sick, and this is the rare Andes strain that can actually spread person to person.
Wait, hantavirus can spread between people? I thought that was like a rodent thing?
Normally, yes. But the Andes variant is the only one that does human-to-human transmission through close contact or shared utensils. The mortality rate can hit 50%. The ship left Argentina last month, and 30 passengers disembarked at St. Helena before anyone knew there was an outbreak, so health authorities in 12 countries are now scrambling to locate them.
That's terrifying. Should we be worried about this becoming another pandemic?
Not according to the experts. One of our sources, Gavin McCracken from his Substack, explicitly said he's not worried about a new pandemic, calling hantavirus insufficiently contagious for widespread human transmission. Health officials are also saying it's not a COVID-level risk because it doesn't spread easily and doesn't mutate as fast. But it's a good reminder that cruise ships are basically floating petri dishes.
Fair point. All right, so not a global crisis, but definitely something to watch. Let's pivot to AI because there is a ton happening.
Yeah, let's start with the big infrastructure story. Anthropic just made two massive moves. First, they struck a deal with SpaceX to lease the Colossus 1 data center, which has over 220,000 NVIDIA GPUs and more than 300 megawatts of capacity. That came online immediately and let them double their Claude code rate limits.
That's insane. And wasn't there something about a huge Google Cloud commitment too?
Yep, $200 billion over 5 years to Google Cloud. And get this, Anthropic's ARR exploded from $9 billion to $44 billion this year. Their gross margins on inference jumped from 38% to over 70%. Valuation offers are now exceeding $900 billion.
Wait, $900 billion? That would put them in the same ballpark as some of the biggest tech companies in the world.
Exactly. And they also launched something called Claude Managed Agents, which is a big deal. It includes features like dreaming, where the system analyzes past sessions to identify patterns, and outcomes, which is basically self-correction based on success criteria. Companies like Harvey, Netflix, and WiseDocs are already using it.
So it's not just a better chatbot. It's an agent that actually learns from what it's done before?
Right. It can delegate tasks to specialized sub-agents too. It's moving towards something that feels a lot more autonomous than what we had even 6 months ago.
Okay, but here's where things get complicated. I saw something about the White House blocking Anthropic's Mythos model. What's going on there?
This is huge. The White House has effectively vetoed further deployment of Anthropic's most capable model, and National Economic Council Director Kevin Hassett went on Fox News to float the idea of an FDA-style pre-approval process for frontier AI models. He literally invoked the FDA parallel.
That sounds like a nightmare for AI companies.
It is. Critics across the spectrum, including libertarian-leaning voices who opposed lighter state-level AI bills, are calling this more restrictive than anything the Biden administration proposed. And there's a political subplot. David Sacks, who was AI czar, has been pushed out. Susie Wiles, the White House chief of staff, issued a rare tweet trying to do damage control, but it was pretty content-free.
So we're entering what one of the sources called the prior restraint era for AI?
That's Zvi Mauschewitz's term, and yeah, that's what it feels like. There are also reports that the US and China are in discussions about restricting public access to powerful AI models. Which is wild because that's coordinated action between two countries that are otherwise in pretty intense competition.
I mean, if both governments are worried enough to coordinate, that tells you something about how seriously they're taking this.
Absolutely. And then there's this really interesting character in the middle of all this, Siobhan Zelis. She used to serve on OpenAI's board. She has four children with Elon Musk as a sperm donor. And she testified this week in Musk's lawsuit against OpenAI.
Wait, what? Four children with Elon Musk? And she's testifying in his lawsuit against OpenAI?
Yeah, the lawsuit has revealed some pretty wild stuff. Court filings show that back in 2018, Musk tried to hire Sam Altman, Greg Brockman, and Ilya Sutskever to build an AI unit inside Tesla. He wanted OpenAI to either become a Tesla subsidiary or for Altman to join Tesla's board.
So Musk's whole narrative that Altman betrayed OpenAI's nonprofit mission kind of falls apart when you realize Musk himself was trying to commercialize it as long as he was in control.
Exactly. And meanwhile, Elon admitted on the stand that xAI has been distilling OpenAI models to train xAI, and now xAI is being dissolved as a separate entity into SpaceX. Musk is pivoting toward becoming a compute infrastructure provider after Grok models failed to reach the frontier.
That's a pretty significant admission. So he's basically giving up on competing at the model level and leasing out compute instead?
It looks that way. And interestingly, after spending time with senior Anthropic staff, Musk said he was impressed by their safety orientation and that no one set off my evil detector. That's a significant detente.
Okay, so Musk is cozying up to Anthropic while suing OpenAI. Got it. What about OpenAI itself? Are they just sitting still?
Not at all. They launched three new real-time voice API models, GPT Real-Time 2, GPT Real-Time Translate, and GPT Real-Time Whisper. The flagship, GPT Real-Time 2, brings GPT-5 class reasoning to real-time voice conversations. It scored 96.6% on Big Bench Audio, which is about 15 points higher than the previous model, and instruction retention nearly doubled.
So this is the thing that's going to power voice agents?
Exactly. The context window expanded from 32K to 128K tokens, and developers can now choose from 5 reasoning effort levels, minimal through extra high, with different latency trade-offs. Early adopters like Glean saw a 42.9% relative increase in helpfulness, and Genspark's call agent saw a 26% boost in effective conversation rates.
That's a meaningful jump. But I'm guessing ChatGPT voice mode hasn't been upgraded yet?
Correct. OpenAI said, stay tuned, we're cooking. But the upgrade is only in the API for now. And just to throw more fuel on the fire, Elon promoted Grok Voice for customer support at the same time. So this is becoming a real competitive front.
All right, so while all this is happening with the big labs, what's going on in China? I saw something about Nathan Lambert visiting a bunch of AI labs there.
Yeah, Nathan Lambert from Interconnects did a whirlwind tour. He visited Moonshot AI, Zipu, Meituan, Xiaomi, Quan Antling, and 01AI, all within 36 hours in Beijing. His big takeaway is that Chinese AI labs have a cultural advantage. They're more willing to do unglamorous, meticulous work, and they have less ego-driven organizational politics.
That's interesting, because the stereotype is usually the opposite, that Chinese companies copy rather than innovate.
Right, but Lambert is saying the opposite. He noted that nearly every major Chinese tech company, even delivery service Meituan and consumer electronics giant Xiaomi, is building its own general-purpose LLMs. And here's a funny detail. Most AI developers in China use Claude as their primary coding tool, despite it being nominally banned.
Wait, they're using Claude even though it's banned?
Yep, and surprisingly few mentions of OpenAI's Codex compared to the Bay Area. The model everyone fears in China is ByteDance's Doubao, which is seen as the dominant closed frontier model. DeepSeek is respected as the technical leader with the best research taste, but it's not positioned to win economically.
And DeepSeek is the one raising several billion dollars at a $50 billion valuation from China's National AI Industry Investment Fund, right?
Correct. That's part of China's strategy to hedge against US export controls. But Lambert also pointed out something really interesting about organizational culture. He said Llama's organization is heavily rumored to have collapsed under the political weight of researcher ego, and some US labs reportedly pay off top researchers to stop complaining about their ideas not making it into final models.
That's wild. So you've got US labs dealing with internal drama, while Chinese labs are just grinding away?
That's the picture he's painting. And he also noted that the Chinese data industry is underdeveloped compared to the US, where Anthropic and OpenAI spend $10 million or more on single RL training environments. Chinese labs build most of that in-house.
Okay, so a very different operating model. Let's talk about benchmarks for a second, because I saw something called Program Bench that looks brutal.
Yeah, Program Bench is from the creators of SW Bench, and it's challenging AI agents to recreate software executables from scratch. No source code, no decompilation. There are 248,000 behavioral tests across 200 tasks, ranging from terminal utilities to compilers, and every model tested scored 0%.
0%? Even the best models?
Even the best. Claude Opus 4.7 only achieved an almost 3% of the time. So this is clearly a skill that current models just don't have.
That's humbling. All right, let's shift gears to policy for a second, because there's a really detailed piece from a 16Z about why AI legislation struggles to pass in Congress.
Yeah, this is a great breakdown. The basic stat is that in the 118th Congress, 19,297 bills were introduced, but only 274 were signed into law, a sub-1.5% enactment rate. For AI specifically, over 100 bills have been introduced in the past 2 years, but only one standalone AI bill has become law, the Take It Down Act.
So the odds are just stacked against any individual bill.
Exactly. The A16Z team identifies 5 traits that bills need to pass: genuine bipartisan commitment, external urgency, committee and leadership buy-in, executive branch engagement, and attachment to a must-pass legislative vehicle like the NDAA, which has been enacted for 64 consecutive fiscal years.
So the most realistic path is to attach AI provisions to something like the defense bill?
That's their argument. The FY 2025 NDAA was 794 pages and incorporated provisions from multiple departments. They also cite political science research showing that public visibility of negotiations incentivizes position taking over compromise, which makes standalone AI bills even harder to pass.
And the White House released a national AI framework in March, right? So there's at least some executive branch engagement.
Yeah, and active committee scoping in both chambers. The A16Z folks are saying the most viable path runs through a comprehensive bipartisan framework coordinated across committees, supported by the White House, and likely attached to a must-pass vehicle. But it's a long, hard road.
All right, let's talk markets, because there's some interesting stuff happening in crypto and stocks.
Yeah, let's start with crypto. DeFi is having a rough month, at least the 5th major exploit since the start of May. The 1-inch resolver Trusted Volumes was drained for $6.7 million on Ethereum. This is on top of a record April where 28 exploits resulted in $635 million stolen.
That's a brutal run. It really raises questions about smart contract security.
Absolutely. And on the institutional side, Bitwise Asset Management is taking over Superstate's crypto carry fund, which holds about $267 million. This is Bitwise's first tokenized fund, and it's Superstate's second handoff to a major asset manager this year.
So tokenized funds are becoming a real category.
They are, and Kraken's parent company, Payward, just acquired Reap Technologies, a Hong Kong-based stablecoin payments firm, for up to $600 million in cash and stock. The deal implies a $20 billion valuation for Payward, and it's their second major acquisition in less than a month.
Kraken is really going aggressive on payments infrastructure.
Yeah, and broader crypto markets dipped less than 2% in 24 hours, with Bitcoin slipping below $80,000, even as the S&P 500 hit a fresh record on hopes of an Iran peace deal.
Speaking of Iran, Gavin McCracken flagged something interesting: live gunfire and explosions on Iran's side of the Strait of Hormuz, even as a peace deal interpretation is being announced.
Yeah, he noted the irony of the most peaceful region on Earth announcing peace while there's active conflict. The Strait of Hormuz is a critical oil choke point, so this is directly relevant to energy markets. And McCracken believes oil prices are near a bottom. Crude is trading in the $90s, and he's arguing there's no incentive to push negative news at these levels.
He's also rotating out of Suncor and into Joy and OB, right?
Correct. He's moving towards smaller, more leveraged energy plays. And there's a broader Korean semiconductor story that's really interesting. KOSPI broke through 7,000, with foreign investors net buying over 3 trillion won in a single day. Samsung Electronics joined the trillion-dollar market cap club, and SK Hynix hit an all-time high.
Those are huge moves. What's driving it?
The thesis is that Korea is undervalued, despite earnings comparable to big tech. Samsung and SK Hynix's combined Q1 operating profit was 94.8 trillion won, which exceeded TSMC's, yet their combined market cap is only about 70% of TSMC's. Part of this is the Korea discount, chattel governance, low dividends, opaque decision-making. But the argument is that memory is now a structurally driven, long-term contract business, rather than a cyclical one.
And the cloud big four, Microsoft, Google, Amazon, Meta, are expected to push 2026 CapEx past $700 billion, which means massive demand for HBM and high-capacity server memory.
Exactly. SK Hynix and Samsung hold well over half the global market in that space. There's also a piece from PhotonCap arguing that the primary bottleneck in co-packaged optics production has shifted from fabrication to testing. CPO testing takes over 100 seconds per unit, which is 10 times longer than conventional semiconductor testing.
Why is it so much slower?
Because it requires simultaneous electrical and optical probing with nanometer-level alignment precision, 6 or more axes of positioning, and in some architectures, double-sided wafer access that existing equipment can't handle. The article identifies 7 companies in the CPO test equipment space: FormFactor, Teradyne, Keysight, Ayer, Advantest, Chroma, and Ficontech.
And the market cap spread among those names is huge, right?
Yeah, from Ayer at $2.9 billion to Advantest at $128 billion. If CPO test grows into a multi-billion dollar annual market, some of the smaller pure-play names could see significant re-ratings. NVIDIA has made $6 billion in total AI connectivity supply chain investments, $2 billion each in Lumentum, Coherent, and Marvell, and all those optical components need to pass the CPO test stack before production.
So this is a real bottleneck, with real money behind it. Let's talk about some of the business and tech stories, because there's a lot happening there too.
Yeah, let's start with GitHub, because they are having a reliability crisis. Third-party trackers measured uptime as low as 85.51% over the past 90 days, which means parts of GitHub were down for 2-3 hours per day on average.
That's unacceptable for a platform that's basically critical infrastructure for developers.
Agreed. And it got worse in late April, when a data integrity incident on April 23rd caused squash merges via the merge queue to produce incorrect commits, effectively losing code for 2,092 affected pull requests. Companies like Model and Zipline had to manually reconstruct their Git history, and GitHub couldn't offer direct recovery assistance.
Wait, they lost people's code?
Essentially, yes. And then on April 27th, a 6-hour Elasticsearch cluster failure caused pull requests and issues to vanish from the web UI. More disruptions hit GitHub Actions and pull request visibility on April 28, 29. Mitchell Hashimoto, founder of HashiCorp and creator of GhostDay, announced he was leaving GitHub after 18 years, saying he'd logged outages in a daily journal for a month and found almost every day has an X.
That's a huge signal when someone like Mitchell Hashimoto publicly walks away.
Yeah. GitHub CTO Vlad Fedorov attributed the reliability collapse to AI agent-driven load spikes, roughly 3.5x over 2 years. But critics noted that GitHub only began planning for a 10x capacity increase in October 2025 and revised that target to 30x as recently as February 2026.
So they were caught off guard despite industry-wide awareness of AI's infrastructure impact?
Exactly. Google, for example, had been preparing for 10x load increases a year earlier. And GitHub's direct competitors, GitLab, Bitbucket, and other infrastructure vendors like Vercel, Linear, and Railway, appear to be handling similar AI-driven growth without comparable failures.
So how much of this is GitHub-specific versus an inevitable industry challenge?
That's the question. GitHub is also migrating from its own data centers to Azure, dealing with 18 years of tech debt, and managing organizational complexity with about 4,000 employees. But the fact that competitors aren't having the same problems suggests at least some of this is self-inflicted.
All right, let's talk about Cloudflare, because they just announced 1,100 layoffs, explicitly framed around transitioning to an agentic AI-first operating model.
Yeah, this is one of the most concrete examples yet of a major tech company restructuring its workforce around AI automation. They're expecting $140 to $150 million in charges, with layoffs substantially complete by the end of Q3.
So this isn't just adding AI capabilities alongside existing headcount. This is replacing people with AI.
That's the implication. And on the personal finance side, we've got some interesting deals. Consumers Credit Union is offering a $150 checking bonus through Finder with no direct deposit required, which is notable since most checking bonuses require one. E**Trade is running a $250 savings bonus, requiring a $20,000 deposit plus a 4% intro rate, expiring June 9th.
And there's a new JetBlue perk, right?
Yeah, the JetBlue Premier Card quietly added Blue House Lounge access for cardholders and one guest at JFK Terminal 5. This wasn't mentioned in the card's recent relaunch, which also included a 100,000-point sign-up bonus.
That's a solid benefit for a mid-tier card. All right, let's wrap up with some rapid-fire stuff, because we're running long.
Sure, HBO greenlit Harry Potter Season 2 with an exciting new change announced alongside the renewal. James Gunn confirmed Matthew Lillard is joining the Superman sequel. Brendan Fraser is physically transforming for The Mummy 4. And a specialized court ruled against Trump's global tariffs imposed in February, dealing another legal blow after the Supreme Court previously struck down earlier tariffs.
And Tennessee lawmakers approved a new House map to eliminate a Democratic-held majority black district, responding to a Supreme Court decision that weakened the Voting Rights Act.
Right. And one more stat that's pretty striking. 1 in 3 American men were not working or job searching in March 2026, the highest level since 1948 outside the pandemic, driven by boomer retirements and young men dropping out due to disability, illness, or study.
That's a significant labor force withdrawal. All right, what should people be watching for in the coming days?
Keep an eye on the White House's AI policy moves. This FDA-style pre-approval idea could fundamentally reshape how frontier models get released. Watch for any updates on the Hantavirus situation and whether health authorities are able to locate all those passengers who disembarked early. And in markets, watch oil prices and the Strait of Hormuz situation, especially given the geopolitical tensions.
And on the AI side, OpenAI's Reline voice models are live in the API. But ChatGPT voice mode hasn't been upgraded yet. When that happens, it's going to be a big user-facing moment.
Absolutely. All right, everyone, that's it for today. Thanks for tuning in to Daily Newsletter Digest. We'll be back tomorrow with more news.
See you then.